But I did have some very nice bluefish tuna, which was...
Bluefin, you mean?
Bluefin.
Yeah,
yeah. Bluefin. Bluefish. That's how much attention I paid to the menu.
Just to remind you again, we've got Moa World Congress special next week, so make sure you watch that one, and I would recommend downloading
it. On the plane on the way to Barcelona.
I was just going to say that.
No, sorry.
You didn't trust me.
No.
I'd recommend doing what Pierre just butted in and said. Hello and welcome to another telecoms.com podcast. Both Jamie and Ian have decided to go on holiday this week, but luckily Ray's come to the rescue, so it's just going to be a dialogue. Thanks a lot for stepping up to the plate, Ray.
My pleasure, as always.
Okay, but we are also, the building's still being knocked down around us, so we've got a pretty short one here, so we're going to get straight into it. Ray's been over in Valencia sampling the marmalade and also the fibre, so we're going to start off by talking about that.
My fibre diet.
There we go. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about some news I covered this week, principally Nokia getting out of the digital health game. Just as a reminder, if you're listening to this on SoundCloud or on the site, you can also watch it on Facebook or on the site, and vice versa. If you're watching it, you can listen to it on SoundCloud, etc. One other thing, this one might be shorter, but we'll make it up to you next week because we're going to do a special pre-MWC, that Mobile Congress special. So sit tight. Right, better crack on. Ray, Valencia, fibre, tell me all about it.
I went to Valencia to the Fibre to the Home conference. It's an annual event very much focused on putting fibre into access networks. And I think the key takeaway for me is that there is at least some decent fibre access, proper fibre access broadband growth across Europe, an expanded European region. And I need to qualify this because a lot of people would say, we've got fibre broadband.
Yeah.
And by that, they mean they have fibre to a street cabinet and then a copper connection. I'm talking about fibre all the way to your, all the way to a building, the home, etc., etc.
So this is all the FTT, fibre to the...
Well, and of course, fibre to the cabinet or fibre... We're talking about fibre to the building is what is because...
Which could be B, P, or H.
Indeed.
Just to keep it confusing.
Indeed. And the key thing, and there is growth in this market for everybody. And there's finally some of the investment that's been talked about for years in Europe. And there's a couple of catalysts for this. One is that there are new entrants with new business models who are forcing some of the incumbents to painfully, in a painful way, to actually start investing in fibre to the home when they don't really want to, my opinion.
Yep.
And also the advent of 5G, which should be forcing everybody, including the incumbents, to stick a whole load of money now into fibre to the building. Because if you haven't got fibre all the way to the edge of the network, beyond the street cabinet, to buildings down streets, so it can go to lampposts, so it can go to digital signage, so it can go to every single place where there might be an IoT-enabled video camera, etc., etc. If you haven't got that fibre in place, 5G, forget about it.
Right.
It ain't happening. And there's just very few markets in Europe where that's actually happened. Spain is probably now the leading country, which is good news for Spain, I would say, because it's had a terrible time with its economy over the past decade or so. But it has really got its act together in terms of regulation, cooperation between the operators, and then actual investments. Spain is now incredibly well placed to be one of the leading digital nations in Europe, whereas 5-7 years ago, you would not have put Spain in that category. And fiber is going to make all the difference. And there are still loads and loads of countries in Europe sitting on their...
And why is that?
Behinds.
Sitting on their fiber.
Because the people who make the decisions, whether they are politicians, investors, etc., still haven't cottoned on to the fact that this is probably the most important infrastructure investment that you can make beyond schools and hospitals for any country now. It's a digital economy. Sticking 40 billion whatevers into a new road is crazy when you could be putting that money into digital infrastructure.
And we, you know, we cover a lot of stories about sort of vendors and operators saying that they need more of a whip round, more state involvement and all that sort of thing. And I totally take your point about it being a critical point of national infrastructure. And thus, I mean, I think a great case in point for the state investing and the whole country reaping dividends was Korea, which was quite ahead of the game on broadband. And some of that was a sort of state initiative, as far as I know. Yeah. So how much of, you know, if you had to split it in terms of sort of private money and public money, where do you think more of the blame's apportioned, or is it even?
Well, it's not so much blame, it's a sort of inactivity. I mean, there's only so much public money that's kind of welcome or allowed. You know, it's better if it's not, because then who owns it?
Yeah. So you've got NBN, like in Australia, they're giving it a
yeah,
go.
Yeah, I mean, that's you know, that's the NBN model in Australia, you know, could have worked, but I think they didn't quite get the model wrong, and they haven't quite got the operational efficiencies or the marketing probably correct. And it's and of course, where it goes wrong, that's always what's highlighted.
Yeah.
The key, I think, in many ways, is not only are there a lot of key drivers for putting fibre in the ground, but there's a really good rule of thumb, which was spelled out to me by a guy called Richard Jones, who's a very experienced fibre to the home network builder, consultant, etc. And his view is the company that is the first to get fibre to a building is basically going to own that building and own those customers. Being yeah. second, forget about it. No point. Waste of money. You've got to be first.
Really?
And so there's so many opportunities now to be first, because there's actually yes. still a lot of buildings, businesses not fibered up around Europe. And it's just a massive opportunity.
So somehow these companies, you know, the picture you paint is that it's just a really obvious return on investment opportunity there. And yet they're reluctant to pull the trigger. What's stopping them?
I think historically, and so there was actually a quite interesting panel which didn't have all the best juice sucked out of it, I would say, at this event in Valencia, which was about investments. And unfortunately, I spent most of the time talking about regulation instead of the actual money and investment strategies. But there's a lot of reluctance amongst investors to invest in what they regard as a telecoms investment, because TMT, Telecom Media Technology yeah. investments, have not been great for investors over the years.
Okay.
But the key to this is not so much a TMT investment, this is an infrastructure investment.
Full stop. Yeah.
And it should be looked at as an infrastructure yeah. investment. And if you've got the balls for a medium to long-term investment, I would say, you know, putting money into the ground, into the fiber infrastructure right now, is either going to pay off in the short term in terms of acquisitions if you're investing yep. in the disruptive challenges, or you will reap the long-term returns, because the value of the data that will run over those fibers, you
yes.
can't even imagine what that's going to be. That would be my
I agree with you, and I think,
but I'm not a banker, so what do I know?
No, you sometimes be described as something close to a banker.
I was a typo.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on the sort of medium to long term. That's definitely a bugbear of mine. I think it does seem symptomatic of short termism, and the investment community can be very short termist, and politicians can be, and everyone can be. And yeah, I sometimes wonder. You know, you see there's some big ticket items by big sovereign wealth funds. Maybe it's sort of Norway or Middle East or China or whatever. Yeah, maybe that's going to be what happens, and then we've got a complete tangent. But you know, we've got the sort of panic that's going on in the States right now, where they don't want foreign involvement in any of their telecoms. But what if that's the only place that a big chunk of money is going to come from? What if it's coming from Saudi Arabia or something, and someone's got some concerns about how they go about their business, but they're the ones with the cash? So by being short-termist ourselves, we're leaving ourselves open to more sort of long-term investors from elsewhere, which may have other pros and cons that we can't anticipate. One other thing I want to ask about this, I think both our sites covered a story where Huawei is getting involved with fixed wireless access in Canada. And, you know, part of that is relevant to what I was just talking about. You know, Huawei is, as we know, in the Trump administration, the whole sort of anti-Chinese involvement in telecoms has ramped up. And basically now they're saying don't even, private citizens shouldn't even buy Huawei phones. I'm not sure what they imagine the sort of Chinese espionage is going to get out of someone using a Chinese Huawei phone, but there you go.
It could be a gateway to spying.
It's a gateway drug.
Where's a gateway phone. Where is the evidence for any of this? Show us the evidence. And
Huawei's going, what about all these other countries we're in that somehow haven't blown up? But Huawei's sort of making a bit of a point of getting...
The onus here is on the people accusing. There are people in the FBI, CIA, et cetera,
countless other agencies
saying that they're a security threat.
Yeah.
Where's the detail? Where's the evidence? Show us that, and fair enough.
Yeah, other than you just think China's a bit generally dodgy.
Everybody's dodgy.
Well, indeed. So Huawei sort of rather pointedly getting really involved with Canada at the moment. No, you're not dodgy. You're straight as an arrow. They're really getting involved with Canada and going, look, see? And that's fine. You know, we can get into the sort of the more sort of geopolitical aspects of that. But one of the areas that we were covering this week is fixed wireless access, which was abbreviated FWA, and we thought might mean sort of fibre with attitude. But it doesn't, sadly. It means
it
fixed wireless
now.
Access. Yeah. But what about that? You know, so you're talking about fibre, back to your event this week, you're talking about fibre to the building. What about doing the last mile? What about doing fibre to the cabinet and then finishing off the job with a bit of millimetre wave 5G wireless to the building? What do you think about that as a solution?
You're adding wireless to what will then be more wireless at the edge, and there are limits in terms of what can be achieved and managed over those wireless links. We will end up with lots of different right at the very edge of the network, there will be lots of different solutions. The fiber will go to lots of different finely tuned demarcation points.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take fiber all the way, for example, to a street light on a street, and then use let's call it a 5G radio connection from there, you're probably going to be close enough to achieve even the lowest latency, high capacity demand applications. What I'm talking, my sort of bugbear here, is there's a lot of companies going, but we already do lots of fiber. We have fiber to a street cabinet. Yeah, not good enough.
Right.
You know, that's potentially half a mile, three quarters of a mile away from some points you're trying to reach. Incredibly dense fiber all the way to something that's at the very edge, and we're talking about very dense fiber. So if you looked at a street map, ultimately you want to see a hell of a lot of fiber going down that street and going off to two different access points. You can't take I don't think anybody's going to, wouldn't like to guess it, I'm not sure that within a home are you going to have a fiber running to every single room in a home? Probably not necessary. But it's got to at least go to, depending on the size of the home or the size of an office, for example, you probably want multiple fibers not only going to the building, but maybe going into the building infrastructure as well. And we're nowhere near that at the moment anyway, I don't think.
Okay, and sort of to round that one off, and I've got one last little question for you, but it seems inevitable that we're going to have to get to the picture you paint eventually. So it's a matter of when, not if. And that comes back to the short-termist versus long-termist. If you're going to have to get there eventually, why not just take the investment hit now and get ahead of the game?
Yeah, it's an incredible lot of... there's a lot of money, a lot of disruption. There's regulatory sort of, hurdles, et cetera, et cetera. Which is why Spain is actually such a great example, because they've managed to bring all those factors together. I think the regulators realized, maybe when they realized they needed to do something to help the country, maybe that was part of the reasoning. I don't know why. But they put in place the ability for the network operators to be able to share passive infrastructure. The different operators have been sharing rollouts, so splitting the actual cost of rolling it out. And now they're they are all going to reap the benefits from that. So you've had, you know, that co-opetition, you've got the regulation, you've got the realization from, you know, all across that economy that this is something that's good to go. And now, well, I think Spain was, after Russia, I think in the last year, Spain added the most fiber access, actual live connections than any other country in Europe. And Russia is a hell of a lot bigger and has a lot more multi-tenant dwellings than Spain does. So,
okay. Well, maybe Spain will be the sort of case study and other people will look at all these Spanish companies suddenly reaping the rewards.
It'll be the poster country, I think. I think it already is within the fibre broadband community. It already is.
Okay, so talking about travel posters, you're known as being a bit of an international sort of connoisseur.
Really?
You wouldn't be. Oh yeah.
Not even in my own house.
Not even in your own house. Well, certainly in the telecoms community, the stories of your culinary odysseys abound. And I'm wondering what delights Valencia served up. Were there any little treats? Do you have a paella? I've got a paella story for you.
I didn't.
Can't wait for that.
Yeah.
I was there only briefly, so I didn't sample.
Well, you said your favorite tapas was closed. Tapas place.
My favorite little tapas place was closed.
That
was
gutted.
I was actually genuinely gutted, but I did have some very nice bluefish tuna. Which was
bluefin? You mean
bluefin?
Yeah. Bluefish.
That's how much attention I paid to the menu. I ate it all. That was lovely.
When it's gone blue, you want to start asking some questions, mate.
But I was saving myself for traditional Spanish delights for the week long odyssey that is Mobile World Congress.
Right. Yes. Well, there is.
Well, wait, that's not Spain anymore.
Oh no, you didn't.
Too soon.
So I was, as I said in the last podcast, I was in San Diego with Qualcomm, and there was a Spanish journalist, if you're listening, hello Nerea, and she was from Valencia, and I was trying to sort of act like I knew what I was talking about. I was going, oh yeah, that's where the paella is from, all the fish and the prawns and all that sort of thing. And she's going, no, actually, proper paella is like chicken and stuff, it's not all fish. So that was my bit of Valencian street cred disappeared. Okay, I will crack on. What have I been writing about? Yes, so Nokia about a couple of years ago, I think, bought a French company called Withings. I could have told them not to buy a French company, you know what I mean? But yeah. And which specializes in sort of digital health gadgetry. So special sort of wearables and other stuff specifically tied into digital health. So it's like a step further into the sort of medical direction rather than just fitness bands and that sort of thing, a bit more technical. And I remember when I was writing about it at the time, I thought it was novel because Nokia had not too long before that got out of devices by flogging its handset division to Microsoft, which famously had sort of deteriorated very quickly after the launch of the iPhone and Android. And they went from their previously sort of impregnable position to...
They had the one that had a 42-megapixel camera, remember? That was
the
only
that's
cool
right.
thing about
I actually
it.
Went all the way up to Tampere in Finland to hear all about that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were really trying, but unfortunately the horse had bolted at that stage, and you could have a camera that...
How do you say that in Finnish?
I'm not going to do a Finnish impression. I will certainly offend all sorts of people if I do. And then you got back into devices, and I thought, okay, this is interesting. And, you know, and I thought the Nokia brand still had a fair bit of residual value, as it's shown.
Absolutely does.
Yeah, as it's shown through its sort of licensing to HMD Global with the phones and all that sort of thing. So I thought, okay, fair enough, you're giving that a go. But then the last quarterlies, about 4 months ago, I think they spent about 170 million euros on it, and they did a write down of about 140 million euros on their digital health, which is basically writing down the whole acquisition. They're basically saying, oh dear, this hasn't really happened. And then recently they announced that they were exploring strategic alternatives, which, as we know, is a euphemism for can anyone take this off our hands? Basically, and we've got to be seen to be trying to get some value for our shareholders rather than just pulling the plug on the whole thing.
They issued a sick note for their health division.
Yes, there we go. Love it. So now they're in the digital ill health business. No, I'll stop now. But Yeah, I just don't know. It was interesting. I was chatting to you about this just beforehand, Ray, and I was sort of going, you know, what's that all about? That was a bit of a waste of time. And in my editorial, I was going in hindsight, and I did say in hindsight about three times in this bit of editorial and admitted that it's always 2020. In hindsight, you know, the whole Nokia thing was supposed to be, we're getting rid of our handset division, we're selling here the mapping division, we're just focusing on networks. Networks is what we're all about. We bought Alcatel-Lucent, we're a network company. So in hindsight, buying, diversifying in that direction was a bit incongruous. And I just thought, I wonder how much sort of sponsorship inside Nokia this had. You know, obviously at the M&A level, it would have been someone's bright idea. But, you know, I can't think of any immediate examples offhand, Ray, but sometimes you get companies buying other companies and the M&A seems like a good idea at the time, but then when they try and follow through, it's not always so straightforward. And I'm wondering if that's what happened with Nokia. But as you, just to finish off before I hand the ball back to you, Ray, as you pointed out, at least they're owning up to the misstep and they're accounting for it and they're just going, all right, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained. That was that.
I think so, there's yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of acquisitions don't work out, you know, and I think historically, when something doesn't go right, many large companies try to sweep these things under the carpet or just not talk about it and hope that nobody notices. And Nokia has basically realized that it hasn't worked out for them. I mean, it was a bit of a bold move. It was an emerging market, so obviously it hasn't emerged for them. But maybe it worked for something else, because digital health, you know, the general area of digital health should, you know, in theory, be a growth area.
Especially with 5G and all the stuff you were talking about.
Well, it's a digital everything, really, you know, yeah. taking everything into that sphere. But they, you know, rather than sort of try and find a way and drag it out to see if they can make some kind of success of it, they basically put their hand up and said, this hasn't worked for us, let's move on. And I think in a way that's creditable rather than the alternative, you know, which really doesn't work for anybody and usually destroys all value,
yeah,
and would give them no hope of selling it. So, you know, I'm sure they will find a buyer for it, obviously at probably a very significant loss.
But then they've written it down now.
Time to move on.
Yeah, and, you know, so before we sort of conclude that, and we'll probably have to conclude the pod pretty soon, won't we, as you've got all sorts of important things to do, I know, Ray. digital health on the whole. So it's a sort of IoT thing. It's a sort of devices thing with the wearables and all that sort of thing. It's sort of a big data thing. And then, of course, it's medical in itself. You know, there was a recent cover story on The Economist that the whole of healthcare was going to be transformed by all this sort of digital angle. I can imagine it, especially when you consider that we've got sort of aging populations. And so a lot of chronic condition management, which currently tends to sort of block hospital beds and be quite sort of labour intensive. If you've got a growing business where people have got some basic gear at home, they've got wearables which enable you to sort of track things like blood pressure, heart rate, all that sort of thing. They can, if it's done well, can be in sort of constant consultation with physicians and manage a hell of a lot of conditions just remotely. So I can see the potential there.
And bring in robotics and machine learning, and you've got automated healthcare that could, you know, take away a lot of the inefficiencies in healthcare systems.
Yeah, well, talking about robotics, I always used to get slightly stroppy responses. I think this time last year at Mobile Congress, when I was using robotic surgery as an example of some of the hyperbole that comes around 5G.
You seen the robot like stitching a grape?
Oh, what, stitching
like
up a grape?
It peels off the skin.
Wow.
So they use it as flesh, and then they're just like...
Damn.
Yeah, sewing the...
Yeah, no, do you know what? And it stands to reason, in principle, if you get it right. Yeah. It's the same with like...
A Hannibal Lecter film.
Do you know what I mean?
It's a white grape.
Hannibal Lecter meets Terminator. But I think
the surgeon controlling it still, but...
Well, that's a thing. This gets back to my sort of standards.
Silence of the Lambdas. I'm sorry.
Oh. It gets sort of my basic sort of Luddite Terminator-ish thing, which is, you know, I'm like with autonomous driving, we get this coming up, how autonomous driving would be better because you won't have any accidents because machines are so perfect and we're so imperfect and flawed and pissed and staring at mobile phones and all these other reasons why we might arse up a bit of driving. Mm. But, you know, the flip side of that is, if they are perfect, and what about when they're not? And then you can get into all the full Terminator, what about when they become self-aware and get sick of being told what to do and all that sort of thing. So, but yes, that's the robotic side of it. But the more immediate, just sort of remote management and all that sort of thing, I think it's a shame that Nokia couldn't make that work, because there's obviously a lot of potential. But I agree with you, Ray. Play to your strengths. We know countless companies in our sector, Ericsson, Cisco, have tried to sort of diversify away from their core competence, and it often ends in tears.
Yeah, I mean, it's something you've got to do, and the Nokia Technologies part of that business, I think, is going to be important. They tried to add to it, and I'm sure they will do the same again, find another avenue.
Cool. All right, well, we better wrap it up there. Short and sweet, but thanks a lot for coming along, Ray, and thanks a lot for listening. Just to remind you again, we've got Mobile World Congress special next week, so make sure you watch that one, and I would recommend downloading it.
Just on the plane on the way to Barcelona.
I was just going to say that.
No, sorry.
You didn't trust me.
No.
I'd recommend doing what Pierre just butted in and said. Okay, cheers. Join us then.
Thanks.